From the Denker Studio on Library Square, this is The Rundown, an exploration of local news, events, and issues that matter to you. I'm Roger McDonough. Today on the program, we bring you the latest in our monthly series of conversations with Salt Lake City Mayor Ralph Becker. Today, among other topics, we look at the results of the year-long legislative audit of UTA.
I've got great admiration for UTA. They are an efficiently run agency. They have accomplished great things, but they have problems that need to be addressed, like any of us who are working in big organizations. And some of them are within their control and some of them aren't.
Plus, new bike lane configurations in Salt Lake City, the mayor's Beers with Becker event, and The Onion covering Salt Lake City. That conversation and your summary of the day's top local headlines coming up next on The Rundown here on KCPW. And thanks again for tuning into The Rundown. I'm Roger McDonough. Coming up just ahead on the show, the next of our monthly conversations with Salt Lake City Mayor Ralph Becker. First up, though, we have these headlines. Several residents and at least one lawmaker are calling for changes in Utah Transit Authority leadership in the wake of a scathing state audit issued this week that questioned executives' pay and business dealings. But one well-known lawmaker and the Transit Authority's board chairman said this week that they have confidence the current executive team can do the work to fix the problems and restore public trust. Republican State Senator Todd Weiler told the Salt Lake Tribune that he wasn't joking when he tweeted that somebody should be fired at the agency. But State Senator John Valentine and Utah Transit Authority Board Chairman Greg Hughes say that they have confidence in the current leadership team. And for full disclosure, I'll note that Greg Hughes participates in the weekly KCPW program Both Sides of the Aisle. After foregoing his KUED press conference last month, Utah Governor Gary Herbert was back in front of the media, fielding a wide range of questions. But on a day when the governor's Healthy Utah plan faced scrutiny at the Capitol, questions regarding health care were again at the forefront on Thursday. KCPW's Ryan Cunningham attended the governor's press conference and filed this report.
In Governor Herbert's last televised press conference in June, he had this to say about his ongoing negotiations with the Obama administration over the Healthy Utah plan.
So there's different gradations here. We've got to work out the details. There's about 35 to 36 different issues, by the way, we're working with the Obama administration on, and we've agreed on about 26 of them.
Fast forward 2 months to August, and not much progress has been made. Here's the governor on Thursday.
And we have 35 different issues that we've been negotiating with the Obama administration and the Department of Health, of which we've agreed on about 25 to 26 of them.
The biggest holdup for Herbert's Healthy Utah plan is a proposed work requirement. In order to enroll in the Healthy Utah Private Insurance Exchange, anyone living between 100% and 133% of the poverty level would have to meet certain work requirements. It's a cornerstone principle for Herbert's plan, but it may be a non-starter for Health and Human Services Secretary Sylvia Burwell. At a meeting of the Legislative Healthcare Task Force occurring at the same time as the governor's press conference, there was more skepticism than hope for the Healthy Utah negotiations. Here's Dr. David Patton of the Utah Department of Health, who has been involved in talks with the Obama administration, addressing the task force.
If we're up to the federal government, they say we're done. We've already said no. How many times can we say no to you on the work requirement? I got a personal phone call from Cindy Mann saying, you know, we've had some good conversations, but we're not going to give this to you. I mean, we're not going to do it. So I think it's something where we're saying, what can we do to try to get them convinced that this is a good idea, is something that would help us in Utah to sell the idea to the policymakers that we have. So really it's up to us in terms of how long do we want to keep working to try to influence them to change their minds.
However, without the work requirement, there may still be some hope for Healthy Utah. Tom Corbett, Republican governor of Pennsylvania, has managed to strike a deal with the federal government for a plan he calls the Healthy PA plan. Like Healthy Utah, the plan would allow low-income individuals to purchase insurance in a private market. The biggest difference? Governor Corbett backed down from his plan's proposed work requirement. Enrollment for the Healthy PA plan begins on December 1st, with coverage starting as soon as January 1st. For KCPW News, I'm Ryan Cunningham.
Governor Herbert says the state should appeal a court ruling that favors the family on the TV show Sister Wives and strikes down key parts of a law criminalizing polygamy. Republican governor said at his monthly KUED news conference on Thursday that allowing plural marriage is not good public policy. He says laws on the books should be defended until all appeals are exhausted. A federal judge on Wednesday finalized a ruling in favor of the TLC reality TV stars Cody Brown and his four wives, deciding that the law forbidding cohabitation violates their right to religious freedom. The Browns' family attorney, Jonathan Turley, says the state now has 30 days to submit a notice of appeal in the case. Charges have finally been filed against 13 protesters who were arrested at the state capitol in February for blocking the doors to meeting rooms. The protesters, ranging in age from 20 to 69, were charged Wednesday in Salt Lake City Justice Court with a misdemeanor charge of disrupting a legislative meeting. The group was pushing for a statewide anti-discrimination law and demanded that lawmakers vote on the measure. The proposal prohibited discrimination based on gender identity or sexual orientation in housing and employment. The measure has been introduced for several years, but lawmakers did not hold a hearing to consider it this year. Protest organizer Troy Williams told the Salt Lake Tribune that lawmakers left the group with no choice. The 44-year-old Williams is one of the 13 arrested. And that does it for a summary of the day's top local headlines. I'm Roger McDonough. This is The Rundown. We'll be right back. Now on The Rundown, we're joined by Salt Lake City Mayor Ralph Becker for the latest in our monthly series discussions. Mayor Becker, thanks once again for being with us today.
Great to be with you.
Before we hit on other topics, you had an event last night called Beers with Becker at O'Shucks. Was it a rowdy all-nighter, and what was the purpose of the event?
Well, if it went all night, I wasn't part of it. I'm a pretty much an early-to-bed kind of character. You know, we've had some businesses that have been adversely affected by the big project we have going on with the new Performing Arts Center and the new tower that's being built parallel to it on the corner, and we really just wanted to show some support for those businesses. They've been obviously adversely affected by both the construction, the pounding of driving the pilings and the footings into the ground, and by the fact that people don't know they're open, and a lot of people don't realize they're open because there's so much construction around them. So it was really just a way to show support. There are two businesses in that building that are retail businesses, Martine's and O'Shucks, and we went over to O'Shucks and had a beer, enjoyed a gathering with a whole bunch of people that came in. It was a fun evening.
Great. You know, it actually makes me think about the amount of construction that, you know, we got done building City Creek Center. We have other construction going on downtown. Is this just part of the process of living in a city is constant construction?
Well, it is in a city like ours where we are just booming with new development. Much of it residential right now, but obviously we continue to have public projects and office projects. And, you know, we thought City Creek was sort of this big boom, which it certainly was. But the amount of development we have going on in downtown Salt Lake City right now not only hasn't slowed down, it seems to just keep its momentum. So, I mean, we're very happy with that. We want a vibrant downtown. We want a lot of opportunities for people to gather and be able to provide for people living downtown in a whole variety of their situations. And we're doing our best to accomplish it. And the private sector is obviously leading the way in terms of providing housing and development. So really, last night with the beers with Becker at O'Shucks and support from our teens, it really was to try to say, hey, come on down to this area specifically that's right. Being affected by construction.
And can you remind our listeners basically the time frame of construction for the new Performing Arts Center?
Yeah, so the new Performing Arts Center and the office tower that is built in a parallel fashion, we didn't think the timing was going to be the same, and it'll be cantilevered over the theater, is to be completed in mid-2016. Everything's on target, but these are construction projects, so it's always possible, I think, to have challenges along the way, which we've had. But this is the new Performing Arts Center is going to set a whole new standard both for development and for providing for new performing arts in a venue that's unlike anything we've had in downtown Salt Lake. And both the office tower and the Performing Arts Center are being designed by world-renowned architects. So we're really going to really have a whole new development in a critical part of the heart of downtown.
All right. A lot of things in the news that I'd like to ask you about, including a transit-related story, so we'll move away from downtown. A legislative audit criticized UTA for a number of things, including what appeared to be a sweetheart deal for a developer, a $10 million quote-unquote prepayment for a parking garage that was never built. UTA still owed $1.7 million from that. There have been questions about high executive pay levels at UTA, more than $400,000 for their COO, Michael Allegra, per year. As an administration that is highly invested in transit, what is your sense of what's going on at UTA, and is it something that needs fixing?
Well, there's no question. Anytime an audit is done, as we've seen in the past, a detailed management audit and an audit that's done of an agency or part of government, we find areas for improvement. And this audit was no different in that respect. As someone who is a fierce advocate for improving transit in our community and for all the benefits that brings, whether you look at air quality, whether you look at giving people good options besides driving their car for ways to get around and all the benefits that come in terms of energy use and pollution and saving people in their pocketbooks, the whole range of reasons. It's tough to see the kind of barrage of really attack in a way on UTA as an agency. I've known UTA and worked with UTA in various capacities for decades. And part of it is that this is a very local issue. I was just meeting with some people yesterday who are in from Denver and are for the first time kind of looking at major investment in downtown Salt Lake. And he was telling me, as I hear from folks from around the country, Utah Transit Agency and what we have done with rail development in this region is the envy of the country. There is no place in the country that has had the level of success we've had around the development of transit in the last 15 years in our region. So when you look at UTA from the outside, and then you combine that with the fact, I think, two of the last, you know, 6 or 8, 10 years, whatever it's been, UTA has been recognized among its transit agency peers as being the best transit agency in the country. When you look at UTA from the outside, it is an unbelievable success story for what they've accomplished for our region. And they've had huge growth, and there have obviously been challenges along the way with some of that growth. I think UTA, their defense of themselves in some ways is hard to justify. In some ways, it's hard for them to be able to get their message out. And I've got great admiration for UTA. They are an efficiently run agency. They have accomplished great things, but they have problems that need to be addressed, like any of us who are working in big organizations. And some of them are within their control and some of them aren't. And I think we have to distinguish that. The salaries, there are something like 50 transit agencies in the country. They're the only transit agency in Utah. So the compensation levels, we don't compete for top level transit folks against others in Utah. So you really have to compare their compensation to others around the country. Hmm. Now, I'm not trying to defend high compensation. I think when you work for the public, you accept that your compensation isn't what it would be if you're working for a business. And but we also need to understand, and we've been through this, I can tell you, at the airport for Salt Lake City, where we have a similar situation. We cannot pay our top-level executives based on Salt Lake and Utah compensation levels, because we compete against the Orlandos and Phoenixes and Denvers, and you know, we can go down the road. We're a top 20 size airport in the country. So it's a real challenge that is not within our control. When I say our control locally, that kind of an issue. And we have to figure out a way, from my vantage point, to address this at a national level to be able to bring a public salary in line with what is acceptable as a public salary. Well, UTA takes great pride, and I admire them for this, for having a very business-like orientation to their work, being extremely efficient in the way they deliver their services. But there's some changes, I think, for those of us on the public side that we need to see made for the benefit of improvement of transit in our communities. And UTA agrees with that, too. So I'm not trying to disparage the leadership there. They've done amazing things.
I want to stick just for 1 second on another aspect of UTA. There's a petition that's been circulating asking for extended service hours for transit in Salt Lake City in particular. UTA says that it doesn't have the money, but it would consider going to the legislature, citing the idea that that UTA is a driver of development. A week ago, you co-wrote an op-ed with UTA COO Michael Allegra that touches on this a little, but would you like to see an expansion of hours and frequencies for bus routes, for transit in Salt Lake City in general? And how do you think we pay for that?
Well, as someone who is advocating for our community, who wants to see both a balanced transportation system for all users of our, who we want to be able to get around, all of our mobility in the city, and as someone who who sees an incredible need for us to be able to make decisions locally, there is no question in my mind, given what I understand about UTA and transit and what our needs are, and UTA is in full agreement with this, that for us to be able to have the kind of service we want, and there are really three elements. We want convenient service. That means we need to have coverage that's within easy access of where we are and where we want to go.
Right.
It means we've got to have hours of operation that reflects when we travel around. And it means we have to have the frequency so that someone who can drive somewhere in 15 or 20 minutes and has that option doesn't have to spend an hour and a half getting there by transit. Those are functions of the amount of money UTA can put into operations. And they are, as I said before, they've been acknowledged for having about the most efficient transit operation in the country. So, I mean, the compensation piece of it for the higher executive salaries, that I'm not saying that isn't an issue, but in the overall scheme of an $800 million budget, it's not a significant factor. And they are a well-run agency. They have to be able to get more revenues. The way that happens is we are at the top amount that the legislature allows for government and the people to vote on how much transit service they want.
Right.
So until the legislature raises the cap on the amount of money that we can locally decide we want to put into transit, and that's by a vote of the people, then UTA is hamstrung.
And there was an initiative last year, a bill of the legislature that would have allowed municipalities to raise taxes to increase transit service should they want to and should they vote for it. But that didn't make it through because I think it was seen as a tax increase. Do you want to see that resurrected?
It came literally within kind of minutes at the end of the session. I think as much as anything, the bill kind of ran out of time is what happens with a lot of legislation at the end of a session. I personally want to see the legislature give us at the local level the ability to control and for taxpayers and voters to be able to vote on whether or not they're willing to pay more for improved service. And that's really what this comes down to. You know, what UTA has done by building this incredible backbone of a rail system in our region is they've made the capital investment. And to a certain extent, it has been at the expense of great bus service. Mm-hmm. And that's the trade-off that's been made. And as I said, it's the envy around the country of what's been done as it relates to rail. But the rest of this is relatively easy. It is a function almost of just operational money. You know, they need more drivers so that they can run their buses longer hours and have more frequent service. They need some more money that's so they can buy some more buses and have more drivers and have more frequency of service and have better coverage. And that really is what this is about. For us in Salt Lake City and other areas, there's some other higher priorities. But they need operational money, and it just isn't going to happen without an increase in revenues.
A petition in itself it may express the frustration of specific users, but it doesn't fix the problem. Somehow there has to be more money out there for UTA to get.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with the petitioners, and UTA would agree with the petitioners, I think. You know, it's like, we need longer service. I've been stuck after hours trying to catch. I went up to Ogden, came back, missed the last train for me going home, and you know, unfortunately, I could afford it. I had to go find a cab to be able to get home.
Right.
So.
Well, you know, there's we're a little bit low on time, but I do want to ask about the Hive Pass. As I understand, the Hive Pass has not been the success that you would like to have seen it be. This is the discounted mass transit pass for Salt Lake City residents. You know, you had a goal to sell a certain number. I think it was 6,000. And I think you've only sold about 2,500 of them so far. What's going on with Hive Pass? I know that there was a deadline coming up at which point you were going to say, all right, we're going to stop sales.
Well, the Hive Pass was a pilot program that UTA and Salt Lake City entered into to provide a greatly discounted annual pass for Salt Lake City residents. And like any new endeavor and pilot project, we were basing it on what were some optimistic estimates in this case, and we haven't been able to meet the goals that we knew UTA needed to make it a break-even proposition for UTA financially. UTA has granted us an extension of another month, and during this period of time, we're going to work closely with UTA to figure out how to keep this Hive Pass going. our goal was to be able to give residents a benefit so that more folks would use transit for all the reasons we've talked about, for air quality and saving money and energy, right, and all those things. We are doing that. We're adding about 250 new transit passes, which means, you know, translates into riders a month now. But there was a period of time when what was happening was people who could get a cheaper rate by buying a Salt Lake City pass were converting their transit full fare or transit discounted fare, but not as much. And so it actually has been costing UTA money. And we get that. And, you know, we want service to continue. And UTA's got to, if they can't pay for the service they have, it means they have to cut service in favor of giving people discounted passes. So we're working with them. Both UTA and Salt Lake City are very supportive of trying innovations like this. And my hope is that we'll be able to find some common ground that will be an adaptation of what we started out with the Hive Pass, that will allow it to go forward, keep UTA more whole so that service doesn't suffer, and allow us to continue growing transit usage in Salt Lake City.
Is your goal to see more people, though, purchasing these passes in the near future? I mean, you've got a month window of extension.
Yeah, I mean, this is a great deal for folks. In fact, I want to encourage people to buy them, because if this goes away or changes, I can tell you it's probably not going to be as good a deal for them to be able to get transit passes. But it provides all kinds of benefits for people. And what we've been doing and we've been learning and been keeping very detailed information as we go along is we've got to reach out to people who see the benefits of having transit passes and reach out to them very directly and make it easy for them to get the passes, because it is an incredible deal. I mean, at $360 a year, that is a deal even if you're not riding transit all the time. So anyway, we're hopeful that people will take a good look at it, at the Hive Pass program. It's being operated and administered through Salt Lake City, and we'll sign up.
All right. And you can find that at the Salt Lake City website, right?
You can.
Yep. Okay. There's just a couple more topics before you have to go, but I know one thing I wanted to ask about were the new cycle tracks. You have protected bike lanes. I noticed that now on 300 South, if you're riding, you are inside of parked cars, which gives you a buffer from traffic. How did that come about?
Well, from the beginning of when I came into office, we've been working on improving conditions for cyclists on the roads, having a true complete street that provides for pedestrians and cyclists and motorists and for transit. And we know that the biggest key for people being able to feel comfortable getting out and riding on the road is to have a safe and secure environment. So we've been experimenting for a couple of years, have been moving towards having protected bikeways, mm-hmm, that are segregated from traffic. And if you 300 South is really our first full-scale protected bikeway that we're putting in place. It'll run from the Rio Grande Depot. This year it'll get up to 6th East. Next year it'll get up, although we'll have some variations when we get up by the university. It'll go all the way up to the university. And it does mean that there will be a bike line that is separated from traffic. And in some cases, it's going to be down along the curb, mm-hmm, on each side, and that will, and then parked cars will be a lane in from where they were.
Right.
And in other instances, there are little variations on that. But we're hoping to give people a good, secure experience, and we want both motorists and cyclists to both pay attention and follow the rules of the road, as we hope they will do regardless, and expect they will do regardless of whether or not with these protected bikeways. But our hope is, really, we just make it easier and safer for cyclists and motorists on the road. And this is something that we've seen used particularly over in Europe, a little bit in this country. And we think we've got the right conditions in Salt Lake City to make this work well.
Any plans to expand it into other streets right now?
There is. In fact, we were going to do two streets this year. One of them was going to be 200 West for a protected bikeway, where we now have a bike lane. And we delayed it for a year because there's going to be construction on that road next year anyway. So to both be more efficient and not tear up the road twice, we're waiting. But we've got the funding through the good work of the city council, and we're going to be putting a protected bikeway in on 2nd West as well, from, I think, North Temple to 9th South.
All right. I know that it's a little confusing for some people when it comes to parking, but you guys have signage out that explains where people should park on these streets and so on and so forth.
Yeah, we're going to continue to inform the public about this because it is a little confusing, I'm sure. But we've got some signage up, and we're going to be doing a lot more work to let people know how the street will work in these new conditions.
Great. I have one last question. I know you're pressed for time, and I just want to get it out of the way. The Onion, the online satirical news magazine, The Onion, says that that tourists visiting Salt Lake City can leave if they want to. They're not trapped here. Right? What's your response to that?
Well, as always, I'm amused by The Onion anytime I see their material, and this is no exception. And they're having fun with Salt Lake, and they have fun with just about everybody, and that's what makes it enjoyable to follow The Onion. In a way, it's fun attention.
Fun attention. I mean, they said that you could drive out to Nevada if you wanted to on I-80. You don't have to stay here in Salt Lake City.
That's true. But, you know, all of us know better that we love being here, and it's a great place to both visit and to gain access to a lot of great territory. So,
some funny misconceptions about Salt Lake from around the country. I know I had a friend who moved out during college whose friends back east asked whether or not the roads were paved. So there you have it.
There are plenty of good stories like that in myths. So.
Great. Mayor Ralph Becker, thanks once again for coming in and speaking with
thanks.
Us.
Thanks. Good to be with you.
And you're tuned into The Rundown here on KCPW. Stay with us. Thanks for joining us on The Rundown this afternoon. The show was produced by yours truly with help from Ross Chambliss and Ryan Cunningham. Our theme music was composed by Tim Myers. We're on the program, we speak with the Democratic candidate for Utah's 4th Congressional District, Doug Owens. I'm Roger McDonough. Thanks for listening. Stay tuned for the Utah Business Report and Marketplace.